Blog Talk Radio.
His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. Malik Zulu Shabazz.
It is indeed my honor and great joy and privilege to be invited by brother and Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is one of the greatest student leaders of all time.
I'm talking about terrorism now. We want a war on terrorism. The war on terrorism should have started 400 years ago. Bring the flag, brother. Bring the flag.
Bring the flag.
The ring. Because I'm here to tell you that false patriotism will not get you out of this. Holding a bandana flag around your head will not get you out of this. Huh? Flag on your antenna in your car will not get you out of this. You might be saying, God bless America. But when did America ever bless God? You might be saying, God bless America. But God might be damning America at this very hour.
What's all this shit I see on here about harassment and all that bullshit, rap for power? You son of a bitch, get a goddamn job and make a constructive citizen out of yourself and stop all this bullshit. You wouldn't have to have no fucking rally for power. You got that message, motherfucker?
Black power. Black power, black power, black power, black power, and more black power to my people. This is your brother, your soldier in arms and comrade in battle, Sean Kweli, Sean Saddam Kweli. Happy to be able to broadcast live once again to you from right here in the hills and the smells of North America. Take a deep breath and a deep inhale. Right here in the hills and the smells of North America. As always, I count this a privilege. I count this a joy. I count this an esteemed honor to be able to talk to you, my sisters, my brothers, and some others from this platform that we know of and know it's revolutionary, called Black Power Radio. This is the official broadcast for that beautiful, bold, revolutionary group, uncompromising black nationalists and revolutionary Pan-Africanists, the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. We give thanks to the God of our forefathers and foremothers, who answers to many different names, recognizing that you don't have a God without the Goddess, recognizing the masculine and the feminine expression of God and all the attributes of that divine and the divine supreme being and creator of the heavens and the earth, the universe, the black man and the black woman, first on the planet Earth and throughout the universe, the original man and original woman who gave birth, that black seed and that black life sperm gave birth to the entire population of the planet Earth. We broke down into sects and tribes and parties, spoke different languages, but we all, in the beginning, bear witness to the one God who we call by many names. And in some parts of the world, you may hear that God called a Kulu Kulu. In other parts of the world, you may hear that God called Yemen Yah. In other parts of the world, you may hear that God called Obatula. In other parts of the world, you may hear that God called Oshun, Ogun. In some parts of the world, you may hear that God called Amun, or Amun-Ra. Other parts, you may hear that God called Lord God Almighty. In other parts, you may hear him say Allah, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But whatever your name that you use for the divine creator, that divine regenerative force that gives force and life to every being, every person, every living thing, every creepeth thing that crawleth on the planet, we give thanks and thank and give that God the praise and the glory for us to be here, to be able to fight, to be able to organize, to be able to think, to be able to breathe, to be able to walk, to be able to talk, to be able to maneuver, to be able to be strugglers and freedom fighters and liberators and brilliant men and brilliant women here in the hells and smells of North America and throughout the world. We give thanks for all of our ancestors, those who came amongst us and gave us proper parenting and proper guidance, and those who set up that hierarchy of elders and that establishment of elders that we had in our community, and those who were able to keep us intact and keep us together to the point to where we wouldn't get off base, and that if we did get off base, we had a council that would come to us and keep us together and keep us on the right square. Our ancestors who, through their brilliant minds and through their creative genius, gave sciences to the world and art to the world, gave culture to the world, gave law to the world, mathematics to the world, gave it all to the world. And from right there at our throne in Africa, right there at our throne in our home in Africa and throughout the world, which is our true home, planet Earth, we rule 196,940,000 square miles. And we were able to chart a course for our people to make advance and to exist in a righteous state of existence. We're thankful for all of our ancestors, those who are known and unknown, those whose names have been scribbled down on the papyrus or the early paper, those whose names are scribbled down on the pyramid text or the Nedu Mater, those whose names are there in stone and carved in stone, or those who may have not been carved in stone at all, and you may not know them, those who fought when the white man invaded lands and tricked black men and black women to turn on themselves and became a devil by nature and wicked being by nature and went into the land to cause mischief and to shed blood. When he came in and when they came in, we give thanks for those who rounded the white man up and drove the white man into the caves and hillsides of Europe and locked them down for thousands of years until they went into another beast state. We give thanks for those whom we got here in the hells and smells of North America, who along the journey took the time to organize and fight against the slave capture and the slave master and those who fought to liberate us from the plantations here in the hells and smells of North America, people like Harriet Tubman and Sojourner Truth and those who were brilliant minds like Ida B. Wells. We have to give thanks, and this is Black Power Radio. And so we're giving thanks to those who struggle with us, and we give thanks for those who are struggling today. We got to give thanks for a man like the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, and give thanks for a man like Noble Drew Ali, and we give thanks for the Nation of Islam and the Honorable and Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and give thanks for that great revolutionary black nationalist, Minister Malcolm X, El Haj Malik Shabazz, Brother Omar Wali. Gotta give thanks for that resurrection and rise of the Black Panther Party, and Minister and Dr. Huey P. Newton, and Brother Bobby Seale, and Eldridge Cleveland, Angela Davis, and Little Bobby Hutton, and give thanks for Chairman Fred Hampton Sr. and Mark Clark, and give thanks for Geronimo Jijaga Pratt and Mumia Abu Jamal and Sekou Odinga, Mutulu Shakur, and so many others, Asada Shakur, the Black Liberation Army, and those who broke away and kept fighting. We give thanks for all of them on Black Power Radio. And if we live to make it all down the wheels of time, if we ate right and had the proper dietary, had the proper thoughts, and kept our bodies and our minds in shape and our hearts in shape and our souls in shape, and we live to make the ripe old age of Methuselah, which is 969 years, or if we went past that and made the age of 1,000, as the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad say you can do with How to Eat to Live, if we do it properly and we do it right. He said we can live a long time if we do it right and stay on that guidance. If we live to be that long, we can never thank God enough for sending us a beautiful, bold, bald-headed black man who took a little group out of Dallas, Texas, started by a man named Aaron Michaels and some other brothers and some sisters that came up in Dallas, Texas, And he came amongst us and helped us to organize and to spread this mission and to spread this work throughout the hells and smells of North America and throughout the world. I'm talking about a man known affectionately as the Black Power General. A Black Power General, the revolutionary roughneck, the urban guerrilla, the lie killer. I'm talking about the truth terrorist, the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad, in whom spirit we go in and move in and organize in. And if we happen to eat right and be right and think right and do right and maybe made the age again of 1,000 or past that or whatever that black God blessed us to get to, we have to give thanks for another bold black man who has stayed the course and been his student for many years and has waged many battles on his behalf and on his front and on his program, organizing across college campuses, organizing in the streets, organizing in the churches, organizing in the mosque, organizing with the wino on the corner, right there from his base in Washington, D.C., an attorney at law who has studied the white man's law and also understands black law, using black law to defend his people and using black laws for black people to free his people. I'm talking about the people's attorney, who is the longest-standing Panther chairman of any of the regiments, which always deserves a salute and a round of applause just for taking the headache and just for taking the strain and just for taking the trials and the ups and the downs and the ins and the outs and the haves and the don't-haves and all that that comes along with being a national chairman and a national figure and a public figure in this movement. I'm talking about the Pan-African assassin, the attorney at war, and our five-star general, Dr. and Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz. And we give thanks for you for listening to us tonight here on Black Power Radio as we dare to delve into this topic tonight, a Black United Front. This is a call, a radio broadcast that will delve and dig into a Black United Front. But in order to understand a Black United Front, we got to talk, of course, about what broke our unity. Because as we talked about us giving the sciences to the world and the mathematics to the world and giving culture to the world and giving art to the world, we had to be united in doing that. In us building the pyramids, in us managing our kingdoms and managing our households and ruling from our throne in Africa, we had to be united in doing that. And so we're going to be joined tonight by a brother who, well, a couple of brothers and sisters, and of course you will take your calls as well. But in this first hour, we'll be joined by a brother whom you've heard a lot about, who many of you had seen on the news and seen on CNN and C-SPAN. And that white man on CNN just straight up said, you are scary. You're one scary guy. And we love the fact that that white man on CNN is scared of our brother, that he scares the hell out of this beast and scares this Peckerwood to death. We love it. Talking about a brother who was directly trained, another direct trained man from the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad, the Black Power General, whom he rode with him for years as his right-hand man, one of his right-hand men, as his national assistant, who wherever the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad went, he went. Wherever he rode to, if he could roll, he would roll, sacrificing his money, his finances, time, even at times not having it, but making it happen and hitting the road and getting where he needed to get to, making sure that the general had everything that he needed to have to push the mission forward on behalf of black people. I'm talking about our National Chief of Staff, who organizes the new Black Panther Party to make sure everything goes correct and everything is rolling the way that it's supposed to roll on behalf of our national chairman and our organization. We're going to hear tonight from Minister Hashim Nzinga. He's going to join us in a few minutes right here at the top of the hour. And then at the second half, in the second hour, I say buckle your safety belts. If your safety belt is not already buckled by the time that Minister Hashim and Zynga comes on the line, you for darn sure better buckle your safety belt for this next brother as we talk about a Black United Front and a call for Black people to unite and to come together wherever we're found in the hells and smells of North America and throughout the world. Talking about a brother who says his name means taking all capitalists out. Taking all capitalists out. So when you hear that name, when you hear the name General Taco, we're not talking about no damn Taco Bell. We're not talking about running from the border and going to get some chimichangas. We ain't talking about nothing from that restaurant. We're talking about an acronym that's serious, that means taking all capitalists out. This brother is the general or the leader of the Black Riders Liberation Party, which is a new generation of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. As we say, a Luther continue or the struggle continues. That there's Black Panthers and there's that Panther spirit that has popped up all over the world and popped up especially in the hells and smells of North America. As Minister Huey P. Newton, you would teach, he would say that wherever there's oppression, you're going to have resistance. Oppression breeds resistance. And Black people, our people, are the most oppressed people, the most suppressed people, and the most stressed people. Black people are the most downtrodden, disheartened, and disillusioned people in the world. And so to have a people like us to be so downtrodden, so disillusioned, so deaf, dumb, and blind, that means that you also have the most resistant people in the world, the most rebellious people in the world, the most hard-hearted people in the world, but the most strongest people in the world in the sense of freedom fighting, because we are the most dissatisfied. I know we see the dissatisfaction of the Chicano community. I know we see the dissatisfaction of the Palestinian community. I know we see the dissatisfaction of those who, some are in some parts of the Egyptian community, and we see it all across the world, dissatisfaction and dissatisfied pockets of Black men, Black women, brown men, brown women, yellow men, yellow women, red men, and red women, and indigenous people throughout the planet Earth. We see the pockets of dissatisfaction, but the Black man and Black woman, known as the African man or the African woman, or the descendant of an African slave in North America, we are the most dissatisfied. We are the most disillusioned. We are the most disenfranchised. We are the ones who are always the ones fired off of the job. Hell, even in your movies and in Hollywood, or what they call Hollywood, Black man especially, you're normally always the first one to die in the movie. The whole plan and aim has been to kill off the Black man and to leave the Black woman like a widow, leave her by herself, leave her defenseless. And so as we talk about a Black United Front and a call for a Black United Front, we're going to talk and we have to talk about what put us in this condition. As we also are touching on Willie Lynchism in 2013. We're going to talk about how Willie Lynch compared us to animals and how Willie Lynch talked about the breaking of the Black man and Black woman was a business move for business principles and required us to be treated like animals, to be breeded like a wild horse, to be breeded like a dog. To pay special attention, or as he say, particular attention to the female, the Black woman, and to the young offspring. So you wonder why there's an effort to incarcerate, a harsher effort to incarcerate the black woman, and a harsher effort to incarcerate young black males and females. Because Willie Lynch said, pay special and particular attention to the female and the youngest offspring. They said that he said that they have to crossbreed in order to produce a variety of division of labor. So you got to crossbreed them, the light and this, that, and the third, to make division. And both must be taught to respond to a peculiar new language. When you hear the Honorable Dr. Khaled Abdul Muhammad, when you hear our national chairman, Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, when you hear Sean Saddam Kweli and Minister Hashim and Zinga talk about us being robbed of our language and our culture and our God, we're not just saying that for no hype. We're talking about a plan and a strategy that was put in place. Put in place by men, by the white man, and by white women, helped along by white women, where they taught us to respond to new languages. And they talked about psychological and physical instruction of containment. This is Willie Lynch we're talking. Willie Lynchism in 2013, for both the male and the female, had to talk about psychological and physical containment. And that they had to, again, breed us like a horse and breed us like a dog and breed us like an animal. Had to break us. They said we had to be broken the same way you break a horse. And that we had to, he said, he wanted to pay little attention to the first generation, that original generation of original breaking, but he wanted to concentrate on the future generations. See, it's bigger than what me and you are going through. It's bigger than what's happening to us now. It's all about what's going down in the future. It's about your babies, my nieces, your nephews, our offsprings, who will have to take our place when we finally lay down for that last time and join the realm of the Egun, or the realm of the ancestors, the ancestral plane. We have to be concerned right now about what's happening and what's going to happen to our future generations. Willie Lynch say, if you break the female mother, she will break the offspring in its early years of development. And when the offspring is old enough to work, she will deliver it up to you. For her normal female protective tendencies will have been lost in the original breaking process. And as we talk about a call for a black united front, as I prepare to bring on Minister Hashim and Zinga, we have to talk about that protective tendency for the mother that has been lost through a process. Children roaming the streets all hours of the night, unprotected. The black woman, her original nature changed to be something other than herself. She's acting other than herself, and she's not herself. The black man acting other than himself, his nature to maintain and to protect and to provide, altered and changed to a different discourse. And now we've been breeded like animals, and we're acting like animals. We're acting like animals. He goes on to say, as I conclude, that they would make the man to be mentally weak and dependent, but physically strong. That we, the black man, would be mentally weak and dependent, but physically strong. Because she, the black woman, has become psychologically independent. And she will train her female offspring to be psychologically independent. He said, what have you got? You've got the black woman. He doesn't use them terms, but he says you got the black woman out front, and you've got the man behind and scared. What is the condition of our people in 2013? You've got a physically strong man and a mentally weak man in most cases. And a woman, a black woman who believes that she's independent of the black man, doesn't need a black man, but that she has to see him as behind and scared, that she views him as a man who is behind everybody else, and that he's scared of everything. Willie Lynch concludes saying, this is a perfect situation for sound sleep and economics. So at the end of the day, you're one of my oppressor. The devil himself and the devil herself, they have said that in order to get sound sleep and to not have to worry about you or to worry about me or waking up the masses of the people and to for them to recognize that this Black United Front is not together the way it should be, not because black people can't get along, not because we don't like each other, not because we have some kind of natural tendency to disagree. This Black United Front is not together because a process has been put on you and on me and our previous generations, and is threatening to be passed down to our future generations. And so we have to talk tonight on a Black United Front, on what it means in 2013 to be united, what it means to be strong, what it means to work together, cooperative economics, cooperative work and responsibility. What does it mean to organize together, even though you might be in the new Black Panther Party and somebody else may be in the church, or somebody may be in the mosque, and somebody else might be in another organization? You might come from the east side. Somebody else may come from the west side. You may have been a blood or may be a blood. Somebody else may be a Crip. You may be a GD. Somebody else may be a vice lord. You may have a high professional standing in corporate America. Somebody else may come from what's called the lumpen proletariat, or the right off the block, the street corner. What does a Black United Front mean? And what does it mean for us to work together in 2013? What does it look like in a working form and a working platform? What does it look like for us to be together? That's what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to hear from Minister Hashim Nzinga. He's going to tell you about his experiences in working with different organizations, working with different people, working with the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad. Going to talk to you about how we can come together, why it is important to do it in 2013 more than ever. And if we waste the time and don't come together, what the consequences are. So, brothers and sisters, let me now bring to you quickly our National Chief of Staff, who I told you served direct with the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad, and has always been a warrior and a freedom fighter and an organizer for black people, a future scholar and leader and a definite historian. This is Minister Hashim Nzinga. Black power to you all.
Black power, Brother Sean. How are you?
Doing fine, sir. How you doing, Brother Minister?
Sound like you fired up, and you should be, because you're dealing with the truth. Let me just say, as we always start, black power to the listening audience. Send a shout out and a black power to our national chairman, who's somewhere I know working hard, and to all our national, regional, local, and all the new Black Panther Party and the black power listening audience family, our whole black community, as we're going to talk about unity. And as always, we want to stop and give 100% respect to the bold black honorable Dr. Khalid Muhammad, our father and our teacher and our spiritual guide now. Brother Sean, it's always good to hear your thunder. And, man, this is a great topic about unity. I want to say that I have been reading a book called The Transcending Mind, and so much of what we need to talk about is our minds transcending. And as we talk about that, we got to deal with emerging our minds into a global community of unity. And just to talk unity, man, is such a profound topic, and it's such a topic that's needed in this hour, because the truth is we control our future, and I like that. It's our responsibility to control our community, our homes, our families, and our people. And I was in a conversation earlier this week when a person said he agreed with Bill Cosby that we're Americans, we're not Africans, and why do we use Africa and African and all that, and we just don't be Americans? And in the principle of Maya, truth and justice and harmony and balance and order, and the rest of the great Egyptian and African sayings, I just want to say first, this is the right topic and the right show tonight, Brother Sean, because under the new Black Panther Party 10-point program, number one is we want freedom. We want the power to practice self-determination and to determine the destiny of our community and of the Black nation. And we cannot control our destiny and our future if we don't have unity. So it's in the building of the new Black Power movement and our 10-point platform to give our listening audience these kind of forums. And that's why we went on to do things like the National Black Power Conventions all over the country and many, many other things that we've done. But the way we need to deal with this, Brother Sean, we need to keep it simple. With the Facebook and texting and tweeting and social networks, everything seemed to move so fast that the government has demonstrated his power to infiltrate and develop a guideline to keep us confused and keep us so puzzled with the promotion, the athletes, the entertainment, while his military is spreading among the Black population and causing the conditions of fear. We don't have to wait on the National Guards. We don't have to wait on the military. Now our local police stations have militarized themselves. And why are we saying all of this? What difference does that make, Brother Hashim? Because these are the tactics that your enemy used to keep you separated. Fear. Fear is the number one responsibility of our demise. So let's get rid of the fear and let's talk business. Welcome to Black Power Radio. Let's deal with Dr. King first, since so much has been done earlier this week in his name. Dr. King, when it comes to unity, April 3rd, 1968, I want all our listeners to Google "I've Been to the Mountaintop" speech by Dr. King that was done in 1968. And I know everybody heard that part, Brother Sean, where he said that he'd been to the mountaintop, he ain't fearing no man, and this, that, and that, and it seemed like he was knowing that something was about to happen and the spirit was on him. But that was a 42-minute speech, and the world has only gave us 5 minutes of it. But if you slow down and go back and listen to that speech, and now with the vast internet, all you have to do is Google it and Google "I've Been to the Mountaintop." This is what King said. King said the way the Pharaoh worked in that speech was to keep the slaves separated. He said when the slaves started to come together, you know the slave was about to get free.
Teach.
King said in that speech that collectively, we, now this is word for word, King said, never stop and forget, collectively, that means all of us together, collectively, but he meant blacks now. He didn't mean white, and he wasn't going back to 1963 to white boys and white girls and black boys walking in the red clay mountains of Georgia. No, this is a 68 speech the day before he was assassinated. He said, never stop and forget collectively, that means all of us together, collectively, we are the richest. We are richer than all the nations of the world, with the exception of 9 nations. Did you know that? This is King word for word. After you leave the United States, Soviet, Russia, Great Britain, West Germany, France, And I could name the others, but American Negroes collectively is the richer than most nations of the world. We have an annual income of more than $30 billion a year, which is more than all the exports of the United States. Which is more than all the exports of the United States and more than the national budget of Canada. Then he said, did you know that? So in King's last speech, he said, in 1968, we, African Americans, spent how much, Brother Sean? Did you hear me?
I'm still here, so I was dealing with the switchboard. Say that one more time for me.
No problem, but I wanted you to repeat that, but I repeat it. He said we spent $31 billion in 1968. Well, there was a stat that came out this year that is 39,472,000 Africans in America, and we spent $910 billion. $910 billion, brother.
$910 billion. That's a lot of money.
Did you hear me?
I heard you.
Now let's talk what Dr. King was talking about. If we put together our resources and stop giving them to everybody else, $910 billion give you power and unity, brother. See, a lot of this is economic freedom, economic power we need. If we're going to come together in unity, we got to bring our money together. Let's go back to King for a minute, brother. In that same speech, King said, he'd been to the mountaintop, but he also said that we have to take our money out of white banks and put it in black banks, brother. He said we had to stop buying rainbow bread. He said we had to stop buying Coke. He named all of these corporations that wasn't doing nothing to black people, and he was going to boycott them. This is 68 days before he died. So if we can get our mind and get our mindset on the first thing and easy to do with unity, is start spending our dollars with each other.
That's
then right. We wouldn't have to worry about our kids being unemployed. We wouldn't have to worry about our mother and fathers being unemployed. We wouldn't have to worry about being unemployed, because any group of people that's got $910 billion to spend, how much of that money is spent on factories? How much of that money is spent on manufacturing? And ain't nobody ever talked about manufacturing more than our great historic and brother John Henry Clark. So black businesses bring in $1,360,000. Now, how in the hell are we bringing in let's say it right now, because I want everybody to know these facts. We spend $910 billion, but our black companies only bring in $136 billion, because nobody is spending money with us. White people bring in $24 trillion. Do you understand what I just said?
Yes, sir.
And I bet you $900 billion of that is our money. So if we're going to talk about unity, the first thing we got to talk about is black unity with economic development. And we got to start talking about sitting down, spending money with each other. We got to start our churches, leading our members back to the black banks. King said in his last speech, stop dealing with white insurance companies and come deal with black insurance companies. See, because as me and you know, Brother Sean, that when we get calls, not all of them, but at least 50% of our calls is because we're financially stressed. People are calling to help pay electricity bill, a water bill, help get somebody a bond out of jail, and help get a house note paid. So if we're going to talk unity, let's make sure we clearly understand that we got the money to unite in unity and start back shopping with black businesses and start back dealing with each other economically properly where we can build an economic base. The Jews have to spend their money seven times with another Jew or in their own community before $1 leaves. They say we spend $1 in our community, and then we out of there spending money with other people. And a lot of this disunity and distrust is because of the white man tricks that move us in different financial statuses that make us, brother, turn on each other and sell out for greed and the power of a Cadillac or the power of a Mercedes or the power of a mansion or the power to live in the suburbs. So we have to break this down, man. We are very influential people, but we don't even know our power because we think we're poor. We're not poor. We're just not, we don't have business unity. And business unity can make us all financially okay overnight because the more black businesses we had in the 30s and in the early days, the more I could give your nephew a job. You could give my son a job. And now ain't no jobs out there, and we're turning to all kind of ways of doing silly things, which disturbs Maya, the balance, and then we end up turning against each other. So the first thing we have to work on is something we can control, and that's the dollars in our pocket. Don't give your dollars away outside your community. Now back to what I said earlier. I don't want to leave what I said earlier because it's going to be the basis of unity. We're Africans in America. Now, why do people want us to call ourselves African-American? Why do they want us to call ourselves African-American? You have people over here from all kinds of countries that hold on to their countries. But the reason they want us to be Americans and not Africans in America, because in human being and mankind, you have to have your DNA and who you are have to have a history. You have to have a tree. You have to have roots. And so if your roots only go back to America, that means you start as a slave. And any time somebody can start your being as a slave, they done took over your mind. And we know
that's right.
We ain't starting this world as a slave. So when you claim one of those 54 nations of Africa, you instantly claim what? Land. No matter what kind of seed is planted in a woman and no matter what kind of baby come out of the womb 9 months later, that baby has a history. And a baby history, if you start talking DNA, goes back to the beginning of time, goes back to the beginning. And so we ought to be the first to rush back to Africa for our beginning because even our sometimes as Christians, we want to talk about everybody getting along and this, that, and that. And I am a Christian, but I still go in my Bible. And as soon as I go in my Bible, it leads me right back to Africa. I think the Red Sea was where? In Egypt, wasn't it?
That's right.
When you talk about the Jordan River and when you start talking about the different places that the black Hebrew Jesus was, it's in Africa. So the first thing we got to do is unify with Africa. Why we want to unify with Africa? Because Africa is the richest nation in the world. Has the largest mass land in the world. Don't you want to be part of that? And every time you try to get on a plane to Africa, you can't get on it because the Dutch is on the plane, the British is on the plane, the French is on the plane, the Spaniard is on the plane, the European and Anglo-Saxon on the plane. Ain't no place for the black man to get on the plane. And the black man's scared to go to Africa anyway because he's been brainwashed. There ain't nothing over in Africa, and I know we say this all the time, but some monkey in some trees. But all of these creative businessmen who go back and forth to Africa like we go back and forth to Mississippi to family reunions ain't going to Africa to hug no black man. They going there because of the iron, the zinc, the coffee, the rubber, the diamonds, the gold. They're going there because this is the richest nation in the world. And so if we're going to talk unity, Let's start with economic development. If you're going to talk, if we made $91 billion last year in America, then what you think 54 nations of Africa is dealing with? You had the Dutch to run the Nigerian oil for almost 50 years. It's called shales. You know y'all pulling them shales. You got the British telling you about BP. You got all kind of oil companies. All of them come right out of Africa. Now you got the Nigerians chasing the Dutch and shales out of Nigeria finally after all of these years. Everywhere you go, it's leading us back, brother, to Africa. So we got to cherish Africa and create a divine bridge, like Marcus Garvey told us to do, back to Africa. And so we want to give Attorney Shabazz props. For the first time now in the new Black Panther history, we will be going and taking a group of new Black Panther members, businessmen, spiritual leaders, Christians, Muslims, and a mixed group to Africa for the first time in March. And it will be updated soon on the website. And I'm talking about March, which is in 2 months from now. We'll be taking our first trip as a group, as New Black Panther Party, to South Africa. So we'll be putting our money where our mouth is. What we're talking about right now, brother, is unity. And if we're gonna unify, we got to unify first with the motherland. And then right. After the motherland, we will emerge. It will transcend our mind and understand how important we are to the whole world community. We will stop being niggas. And all of a sudden, we will understand the influence that our people, our culture has had on the world. And that will unify us with the little problems we got overnight, because we will discover that the problems we got have been put on us by somebody else. I was looking at an African piece the other day, and a brother said, we, as Africans, we didn't have no problem. The white man had a problem, and he made us his problem. But we can't continue in 2013 tell our kids and continue to be men and women and tell our kids that the white man this, the white man that, the white man this, the white man that. And we got enough PhDs to wrap around the globe. We got enough master degrees to wrap around the globe. We got enough ministers to wrap around the globe. We got enough bankers to wrap around the globe. We got enough insurance men to wrap around the globe. We got enough plumbers and house builders. We need to build our nation and stop blaming the people who are using us to build their nation and saying they're our problem. We are not no longer the white man's responsibility. We're our own responsibility. Rosa Parks and Harriet Tubman took care of that. So if we're going to talk real unity, the first thing we got to do is go to Africa so we can get our mind back, get our dignity back, get our manhood back, and get the purpose of who we are back, and embrace who we are and discover the great things and the miracles we can work as a people together. Then we have to get what we got and what we're doing every day, destroying ourselves, giving our enemy $991 billion to help destroy us more and start spending that money among ourselves. We might have to give up a PlayStation. We might have to give up a bag of laced potato chips. You might have to give up your Coke and your double scoop of chocolate ice cream until, like Brother John Henry Clark say, we don't even make a safety pin to hold our baby diaper up. We might have to start putting that potato chip money and that ice cream money and that Coca-Cola money together to start us our own pamper company if our children don't wear pampers, Brother Sean. We might have to merge and get our own soap company, Brother Sean. We might have to merge and get our own shoe factory, our own soup factory. Everybody want to talk about Gandhi and how Gandhi preached nonviolence and how Dr. King took on Gandhi nonviolence movement and changed the world. Hell no. There was a big difference between Dr. King and Gandhi. Gandhi was in India, which was his country. King was in America, which was a runaway slave, and the British still on America to this day. Now, I'm not getting into it with the ones who say, well, Brother Hashim, we built these roads, we built the White House, we did this, and I want a piece of America. I do too. Because no matter how the new Black Panther Party feel and the nationalists feel and the Pan-Africanists feel, we still got 70% of our family that's spending that $91 billion that ain't going nowhere and that's going to be right here. So if we're going to be right here, what's wrong with owning black manufacturing companies? What's wrong with owning black electricity companies since Louis Lattimore put the filament in the light bulb as a slave? What's wrong with owning our own transformer company since Frederick Jones invented the transmitter and put it in there so we can talk on these phones? We got more slaves that did patents and engineering than we doing today because our children are graduating from Morehouse, graduating from Howard, graduating from Hampton, graduating from even the white schools of Harvard and Yale and running off to the white corporations and giving their intellectual properties to the white man for a BMW and a credit card and a white woman. We have to come back to our own communities. We got to bring our $91 billion back, and we also got to fight tonight on this phone, Brother Sean, to bring our intellectual property back, which is the most important and valuable thing God ever gave us. And we got to also bring, which we are the most spiritual people ever to touch this earth, we got to bring spirituality back, not no fake church on the corner trying to see who dressed the best, who pulling up in what car, who has the best-looking wardrobe, the newest Gucci purse, but who has the best black mind that could use these buildings because probably 50% of the real estate that we own, because we know we're renting and leasing, is the black church. So the black church has to come back and be what it's supposed to be if we're going to unify. We got to start being able to use the 50% of the real estate that we own and get in these black churches and start cooking again for our people, start teaching again when the church just can't be open on Sunday. It's got to be open 7 days a week. It's got to be like the lighthouse in the storm. And we have to unite with the preachers, and we got to start teaching unity. So much division. They say the most divided day, Brother Sean, of the week is Sunday. And it used to mean black and white. Mm-hmm. But now I say the most divided day is Sunday, and it's Africans in America that's divided. I go to Eddie Long's church. I go to such and such church. And I go to such and such church. So now we got the preachers acting a damn fool out here trying to be the biggest preacher. Now we got the members bragging that they got the biggest preacher. And we all 6 cents away from Georgia Power truck pulling up in our driveway.
It's true.
This is ridiculous. I'm not talking about no hocus pocus unit. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about economic development. I'm talking about creating a situation where our college graduates, where our PhDs, where W.E.B. Du Bois used to call the talented tent, would now come back home and create the dreams in their own communities, create the possibilities of our pre-K students and our first grade students to see corporations again black in their own community. They said, and for some reason Dr. King's spirit is on me a lot. Maybe it's because this is the time a lot of people talk about him, but I know him inside out. And they said what made Dr. King so strong is when he left his house that people come to Atlanta on Auburn Avenue to visit his birth home, when he walked one block, he was at Ebenezer Baptist Church, which his father was the preacher of. He walked another block, it was Atlanta Life Insurance Building. He walked another block, it was Atlanta Black Newspaper. It was Atlanta Black Dentist. It was Atlanta Black Doctor. It was Atlanta Black Funeral Home. It was Atlanta Black Savings and Loan. It was another black insurance company. It was another black funeral home. So by the time he got to a sign that said whites only, he was already black enough, leaving Morehouse College a block behind and Morris Brown College a block behind and Clark a block behind and Spelman a block behind. He had enough black that his self-esteem was so high that white-only sign didn't deteriorate his self-esteem and who he was. He could stand up and fight as a man.
Teach.
So we got to give our children the same opportunity to see black businesses. There's no way in the world we're supposed to be bragging on our daughters and bragging on our sons and bragging on our nieces and bragging on our cousins and talking about they just graduated from Vanderbilt, they just graduated from Howard, they just graduated from
Stanford, or they just graduated from Clark, or they just graduated from Hampton, and then you ask them, where are they? And they're working from some lily white company somewhere in some country town that we never heard of, creating something that they could be creating in the black community. Black college students have to start getting together and rallying, and the engineers got to come together. The scientists got to come together. The geologists got to come together. The teachers got to come together. Start opening black schools again, man.
Teach. That's
start
right.
Coming up with some ideas and stop selling your trademarks and your patent to some corporation and come together with some other black people and go to the black banks and the black businessmen and fund your own new cell phone or whatever we're buying. We don't need to be buying anything else. Black unity, brother, I'm just bringing it home. Black love, black unity, it starts with spirituality, which we are the most spiritual people on earth. Then it comes to our mindset and our understanding of education and not miseducation, as Carter G. Woodson, the father of Black History Month, Negro History Week in 1926, as we creep up on February and people will start pulling out their red and black green flags and their programs for February. Then they'll put it up after February. But black history and unity go hand in hand, and we have to study our history because it's a map to keep us from going in a vicious cycle, Brother Sean. And
that's
right now I'm upset because every time I read this word, $91 billion, I know we shouldn't have the problems that we got. And then people understand that that black and that flag is for you and that green is for land and that blood is for you. Might have to shed bloodshed to get the where you need to go and the dynasty you need to go. And that's in self-defense and protecting your nation.
All day.
So if we're going to talk black unity, we have to clearly understand that the SCLC, the NAACP, CORE, and the Urban League and PUSH and Action Network, Al Sharpton's group, and all of these groups, man, it's time for all of us to come home with one common denominator. It's time for us to stop trying to be the big group on the block. It's time for us to understand, like the Million Man March that Minister Farrakhan so beautifully put on in 1995, so many people was against it because he was a Muslim leader. But at the end, people lined up in unity to be on that stage and that roster because they figured out this was going to be the biggest show ever in American history. King went in 63 and had a dream, had 250,000 there, and later Farrakhan bought, and they can never give him the credit for it, and they can never give him the love and respect he needs for it. He bought over 2 million black men. Didn't even bring the babies. Didn't even bring the wives.
Right.
2 million black men in unity to Washington, D.C. So, Brother Sean, I know the hour is getting close to your next guest. So I want to say, if we want to talk unity, we got to talk economic development. We got to talk spirituality. And we got to talk global unity because the African nations, as they try to make us the minority in the United States, the African nations, Brazil, when I say African nations, it spread it to Trinidad, it spread it to Jamaica, it spread it to the Bahamas. We got to understand that ain't nobody on this earth more than the black man and the black woman. Yeah, they got us listed at like 39 million in America. And they got whites at like 244 million, Hispanics at 48 million, and Asians at 14 million and some. But worldwide, we're the majority. So when we talk unity, let's make our minds transcend, and let's talk unity about Ghana, about unity in South Africa, unity in Zimbabwe, unity in Nigeria, unity in the Congos, unity in the Ivory Coast, unity in Brazil, unity in Haiti, unity in Trinidad, unity in the Bahamas. And then we will stop being the buffoons of the world because everything else is illusion, Brother Sean. Everything else is sensationalism. Everything else is somebody else controlling us, because the Jews control Fox and CNN and all of these networks that we worship. And Hollywood is controlled by millions and billions of dollars, and they get our top stars and make us worship them, and then they write the script, and there we go.
That's right.
There we go. Why we on a Black Hollywood?
Teach.
We can go all night on this unity, Sean, but I only had 30 minutes, so I had to stay in tune with economic development. That is what's making us die early, because we don't have insurance. That is what's making us not be able to send our kids to the best school. That is what's causing us not to be able to feed our children 3 square meals a day. That is what's causing us to have to go and be beggars from the other nations when we don't have to be. So I'll just say this, and that last speech, Dr. King said, a man can't ride your back unless it's bent. Let's not only talk about unity, let's straighten up our back and be men and be women. And then let's unify spiritually. Let's unify economically. And let's re-educate our children. And you got to start that by building our own educational facilities that we can control, and no board with 9 white people and 2 blacks talk about the curriculum, and we can get some black history books back in school. And then when we get ready to have Black History Month, we can spread it out to all year. And Brother Sean, I don't know how much time I got, so I'll yield to you right now. And you can tell me.
Yes, sir, Brother Mitch. You can finish your point. We're right at the top of the hour. Go ahead and finish your point.
Okay, well, to wrap it up, brother, it's just to say this. We are heading to Africa in March, and there's a new design when we come back from Africa. Our minds have transcended, and we're going to make that journey. And I know a lot of people saying, well, I done been to Africa 20 times. I done been to Africa this. I done been to Africa that. Well, we all need to go. And we all need to have a new agenda of unity with our African brothers and sisters and come back in harmony with each other here. And there's nothing wrong with African people uniting. When you go to New York, don't nobody say nothing wrong with Chinatown. You go over there and cross that bridge, that's where all the Jews be. Don't nobody say nothing about that. Everybody unite with their people. When you go over and see where all the people from India hang out, nobody say nothing about that. But whenever you go to Harlem and there's a black group of people hanging out, now Harlem got to be the rainbow. Now everybody got to get a piece of Harlem. Once we start this unity, let nobody turn us around. Let nobody turn us around so we won't end up 50 years, 100 years from now looking like the buffoons of the world when we are the creators of civilization. Let's bring balance, Brother Sean, and I end with that.
Yes, sir. Brothers and sisters, that is, and this is, Brother Minister Hashim Nzinga, National Chief of Staff of the New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. I mean, good God Almighty. Good God Almighty. I got to give it to him. Let me see if I got to give it to him. Let's give him a round of applause. Got to just give it to him. We got to just give it to him. There we go. Give it to him. Minister Hashim Nzinga has laid it out there for us tonight, brothers and sisters. He's laid it out there for us tonight. From top to bottom. And as he stressed, we're going to Africa. We're going to Africa in March, and there's going to be a delegation. And he's helping to spearhead that, along with our national chairman. As I said in the beginning, he's making sure that everything goes right. And that's what he does. He's on his post, making sure that it goes right. And so we're going in to Africa, fact-finding with our delegation at the invitation of the PAC, the Pan-African Congress, and some others. And it's going to be beautiful. But once again, brothers and sisters, Minister Hashim Nzinga, National Chief of Staff for the New Black Panther Party, support him, ride with him. What he asks you to do, do it. Help him. He's organizing, he's moving, he's building up, and he's growing and he's expanding. And for the white man that's listening, that you thought you had him down,
you can hear clearly. God is with him, and God is with us. The God of our forefathers and foremothers with us. And Minister Hashim and Zinga stand strong. Brothers and sisters, we're right at the top of the hour. And if you're just now tuning in, you're tuned in to Black Power Radio. This is the official broadcast of the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. Now, where we're going to now, we're going to the second half. As these shows are always broken up into halves, and we try to provide you with great guests or our top leaders within the new Black Panther Party and the Black Nation. And this next brother is no slouch. This is Minister Hashim Nzinga, top heavyweight. If this was a boxing match, he'd be a top heavyweight. He'd be like Tyson in his prime or Ali in his prime. And this brother coming up here is a top heavyweight. As I say, the general or the leader of the Black Riders Liberation Party. And he's a brother who knows very well about cooperation, unity, working together, building coalitions, Black United Fronts. It's what he does, and it's what we do. And we're anxious to hear from him now. This is our brother again, as I told you, whose name means taking all capitalists out. Let's welcome back to Black Power Radio, as he's no stranger to us and definitely family, and the Black Riders are family with us. Let's welcome them all back and welcome him back. This is General Taco. Black Power, all power to the people. You're on with us, brother.
Power to the people, Black Power, man.
Hey, how are you?
All right, how y'all out there doing?
Doing good. We're doing good, brother. Doing good. The topic tonight, Black man, is a Black United Front. So we'll yield the floor to you and hear from you on some brief opening remarks on a Black United Front and us working together. Is it possible? Is it a reality? What are your thoughts?
See, it's important for us to develop a Black United Front because, you know, there's a lot of groups out there and revolutionary individuals. You know, we all get into these discussions and these beefs around ideology, around the need for armed self-defense, around the need for armed struggle, whether we should capture three states and take them or should we go back to Africa. And all of these little small disagreements has caused serious mistrust and suspicion in the Black community. And based on that, it's a continuation of the counterintelligence program that we must all study and learn about. See, because no matter if we agree or disagree with armed self-defense and the need to protect our community on a vicious self-defense level, we still have to understand clearly, like a great leader once said, he says that Black unity is stronger than a nuclear bomb. I'm going to say that again. He said Black unity is stronger than a nuclear bomb. Just understanding that is so important for us to look at and really assess today. And one of the main problems that's going on is in our generation with the black-on-black violence and the gangbanging that's been going on for far too long. Actually, this situation is making our ancestors turn over in the grave, you know, and that's a cheap way to look at it in regards to the ancestors, but it's the truth. You know, they're turning over in their graves based on this black-on-black violence. You know, we have all these other issues, AIDS, we got police terrorism, but the key thing amongst our generation is that we must stop the senseless killing. Now, I broke down in an article about the need to understand the gang mentality and how this corrosive white supremacy outlook has been going on in our community for far too long. I don't know if I got enough time to read it, though, brother. So could you tell me how much time I got so I can just break it down?
Oh, yes, sir. You got time, brother. You're right at the top of the hour. Take your time.
All right. Usually, you know, I don't write stuff down. I try to come from the head. But this assessment is so important and so valuable for us to understand the mentality within the hood. You know, a lot of us came close to gangbanging. A lot of us had family members who gangbang, but we coming from the heart of L.A. And for our Oakland comrades who are out there listening, who just got through smashing on the pigs up north, Black Power. To all the new Black Panthers who are out there listening, Black Power. To all the revolutionary groups who are out there listening, Black Power. to the ancestors who are out there listening. Black power. Now I want to read this article. It is super important, so I want everybody just to bear with me as I read along and give you the other side of the gun, the mentality of the gangbanger who has been transformed. The name of it is Inside the Mind of a General, a brief autobiography of an L.A. gangbanger turned black revolutionary. Part one is Trained to be a Killer for the Hood. H. Rob Brown said, "We are starting to realize what racist America has long known, and that is every black birth is a political birth because they don't know which one is going to be the one to raise the people up. Racist America wants to set up that black person before they realize their true potential." This is what H. Rob Brown said. Now listen to this racist U.S. government memo from COINTELPRO. It said their goal was to prevent the rise of a black messiah who could unify and electrify the militant black nationalist movement. This was COINTELPRO. Now, as I read along, go like this. In 2003, a scientific study was conducted to compare the war-torn post-traumatic stress levels of Iraqi children and South Central children during the height of America's imperial invasion of Iraq. The stress of children in South Central was deemed much, much higher. This is a fact, even though the so-called War on Terror, World War III, encompasses airplane carpet bombings, tanks, robot drones, improvised explosive devices, IEDs, and even suicide bombers. I was born in L.A. on November 13, 1973, during the time when the racist U.S. government secret war against the Black Power Movement was in full swing. Most black people were unaware of all this. But as a child whose parents weren't in the struggle, I knew the less than most. As the early 1980s rolled around, the oppressor promoted the hideous low-intensity war maneuver of keeping black people in absolute poverty and smuggled crack cocaine combined with military weapons to the notorious tribes known as the Ghetto's two largest hostile armies, the Bloods and Crips. The Bloods and Crips were known to be the main gangs recruiting young black people in droves when I was 10 years old. It was becoming increasingly popular to take a side, blue or red, Crip or Blood. The choice offered a sense of ghetto pride, glory, and respect, but most people tended to either ignore the deadly repercussions or construe the thought of violent death for the hood as the height of true soldierism or gangsterism. Later on, I learned that in order to be really down, one would have to adapt something like a Japanese kamikaze soldier mentality. The weapons of choice varied, but most common and respected was the Fully, or the Chopper, as it has come to be known. The Fully was any submachine gun ranging from something like the Uzi, MAC-10, Tech-9, or long assault rifles like M16, the AR-15, and especially the most loved and admired was the high-powered 100-shot AK-47. Almost every gangster soldier in the hood has a romantic fascination with the AK-47. It was considered to be a highly efficient weapon in urban street fights because of its stopping power, menacing rapid-fire sound, and the brutal destruction left in the aftermath of its audacious use. More than one bullet fired from a moving vehicle in a drive-by with no lights on at night were almost comparable to a barely visible German tank with nitro gas tanks attached to the tread, thus making it more deadly than a German tank to the average L.A. black civilian because of this war tactic's stealth, surprise, force, and extreme mobility. For those who are unaware, a black civilian is a non-combatant or a non-affiliate, a person not in a gang. They were usually horrified at the violent pitch of the gang war and usually fell victim to uncalled for harassment, intimidation, sometimes death, due to being in the wrong place at the wrong time. to the average gangbanger soldier, the drive-by was similar to a fast-moving armed vehicle that should be quickly identified, surrounded, and destroyed by counterattacking the driver of the vehicle with multiple gunshots through his weak windshield. It was hated by most, but not invincible and invulnerable to anybody who participated in the armed conflict. It's no different from when the race in the U.S. uses real tanks and launches airplanes to do flybys on other countries. Unknown to us at the time, we were basically mimicking and emulating racist white America's imperialistic takeovers of other poor, defenseless countries, only on a smaller ghetto level. Walking down any street in South Central, or as we called it, concrete Vietnam in those days, being young and black, one could be literally executed in a barrage of hollow point bullets for a perceived or misperceived transgression, ranging from wearing the wrong color or mad dogging, which is staring intently with an attitude and a scowl on one question of atrocity, with possible intentions to verbally or physically attack the target of the battle steer. To every black person in the hood is poor and oppressed, though, whether they know it or not, we are always wearing a disgusted, dream-deferred, frustrated, angry look. There have been an enormous number of people who have been gunned down in cold blood because of this innocent, angry look on their face. Other instances, one would be murdered for just being in an area or neighborhood without being able to name drop or instantly rattle off a long list of reputable or respected people in that hood. Survival depended solely on the erratic, unstable mood of the person that hits you up or angrily asks you, "Where you from, fool?" Most of the time, this serious question, which every gangbanger was ordered to ask, was accompanied by a severe beating or a painful quarter-sized hose pushed through your body with lead for being out of bounds in the wrong hood. If one managed to survive the encounter at all, it was considered to be a friendly warning to stay out of their turf or hood. Very few people got a pass or permission to walk or drive slowly through an unknown hood. Only those who engaged in the war or those retired veterans from the war who stay abreast of the fluid, ever-changing battle lines of the conflict can grasp this black subcultural logic. The white American dominated mainstream culture of individualism and materialism pushes survival of the fittest, might is right, and this is practiced by poor blacks preying and capitalizing on each other. The underlying economic theme was turf or territory for drug sales to support individuals in the hood who subsidized the social being and hood upkeep with hood party, gang soldier uniforms, housing, weapons, flossy cars to flash, and a worldwide respect for the fear reputation of the hood. We were completely blind to the fact, though, that no matter which hood climbed to the top as ghetto hood stars, we were constantly destroying ourselves by trying to acquire the white American dream of leisure that the racist ruling class already had. Meanwhile, they laughed and benefited financially off our pain by jacking us and robbing us of our last meager resources to live and manipulated us to bring ourselves to premature death. Black life has no value in this very cheap and racist America. They manipulated all of our people through their fascist institutions like the media and their colonial school system to believe that we were inferior as a race of people who had no history. We had no culture. We had no language. No accomplishments whatsoever, according to them. This warped thinking built up a fanatical, reactionary, suicidal self-hatred mentality. Not one of us could envision or imagine that we were brothers and sisters of the same race whose great, 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 great grandparents have been defeated in the war led by white supremacy. Such a thought would have encouraged aggressive ridicule from the homies in the hood. if practiced, corporal punishment accompanied by banishment from the hood, if not outright execution for treason, for even pushing that line. Bloods and Crips in those days had an unorthodox, tight-knit military regimentation. Enlistment consisted of passing many different youthful hand-to-hand combat battles driven to bloody knockout. As one innocent, unknowing opponent stumped out the other, the OGs or the big homies, the head commanders of varying rank, usually tested in gunfights, and who had weathered the test of time in a gang war in which almost no one survived without being killed or seriously wounded by 21 years old. They looked on from across the street, but they would also instigate the fight to almost death just by their mere presence or by actual taunts and comments to pump up the combatants, like, "Don't be no punk, Lil J. Rob. Still on that nigga. Or bomb on that fool for the hood." That's what they would say. Once a child earned respect for not snitching or telling on anyone from the hood to nosy neighbors, parents, or the racist police, he or she would be brought up in an informal or formal meeting between many different homies with varying rank. He or she usually would be approached by a small unit assigned to the mission to recruit them by offering congratulations and a victory in a past street fight and encouraging the young individual to join the hood to make it stronger and respected by bringing their skill and courage to bring down on the hood opposing us. Usually we will be smoked with the young prospect to create a sense of solidarity and brotherhood in their tense drafting process. This was blood love. This was Crip love. If a person denied the honor of such enlistment, that hood love could turn into compulsory enlistment. You would be verbally disrespected, probably beaten, and threatened with possibly being smoked as you were conveniently labeled as a possible spy for the other enemy side. Most people, though, can resist the magnitude and the magnetic appeal of gangbanging because all of the artificial glory this white supremacy society pampers on their killer soldiers for hire and the racist police and the fake-ass military. Their colonial schools taught us this shit. Recruitment into the hood was soon celebrated by all members with the mindset of inviting other new young players in a murderously serious game of tag. If you are caught in the and found hiding, you don't only become it, you die. This reactionary enthusiasm, combined with vicious, violent self-hatred, drives most tribes into a frenzied zeal for black blood. The recruit, the first who will feel the fury by shedding his blood under the numerous blows he will suffer at the hands of his homies by being quartered in and having to fight up to 3 to 5 of them. This is also a test of will, determination, and courage in which the recruit is expected to fight until he or she is knocked unconscious. This is one of the first tests, but definitely not the last. Since the gangbanger's job is more than just soldiering, other requirements included riding on walls with the most updated gang calligraphy, dressing with style organized with the deadliest-looking gun, showing signs of military strength by walking around with his peer rank group in full uniform, usually sagging khaki pants, white T-shirt, with hood-colored representatives in the shoestring, the belt, the rag, bag in one's pocket or one on one's head. Y'all with me? Learning the language of the hood through replacing every single word in black slang English that started with C into B. If one was a blood, and if one was a Crip, every word beginning with a B into a C. If one was a blood, and you would ask a stranger for a cigarette to smoke, you were using the correct blood slang. If you were telling someone how you made it so fast to the hood, you replied, "I got to the cuff station right on time, and the cuff came driving up real quick." You were using the correct Crip slang. Learning your own hand sign and every Blood and Crip hand signal was deadly serious. Also, you will be constantly briefed and expected to memorize the deadly incursions into the hood by what we call embargoes and how many wounded or casualties was inflicted on our side from the attacking adversary. The entire city will be required to learn by street and map out to determine enemy hoods, allies, and very rarely those who were neutral. One had to be extremely vigilant, committed, aggressive, and disciplined in order not to be pushed into an early grave. To be caught with your guard down, slipping, hanging out at the wrong alley in the daytime or the wrong corner at nighttime could result in your body being riddled with bullets from head to toe. There were also different codes of conduct for many hoods. In the beginning, most hoods enforced strict rules on their hoods, like don't rob the elders in our specific hood, don't shoot children and non-combatants, don't burglarize the houses or steal from the homies that stay in the hood. There was a strict code of silence that meant no snitching whatsoever, and other codes of behavior before crack cocaine was smuggled into our hoods by the government. After crack came in, it destroyed the little disintegrating unity left over in our hood from the powerful political and military thrust of the Black Panther Party. I only learned of this truth much later, after a long gangster soldier lifestyle that resulted in me almost receiving a life sentence in prison for allegedly shooting off the leg of a young Black man in a gang drug-related incident in 1992. As the early 1990s rolled in, though, I and others of my generation have been through enough shootouts, funerals, gang riots, and have pushed around enough wounded, paralyzed homies in wheelchairs that nothing came as a surprise to us. The sound of gunshots didn't make us flinch. Seeing dead bodies didn't make us nauseous or pierce our callous demeanor. We have been shell-shocked, conditioned, brainwashed, and indoctrinated with the self-hatred values that white supremacy and capitalism inspire in their colonial subjects. Unfortunately, unknown to us, we were hunting and killing each other in a war our real racist enemies manipulated into fighting with no victory in sight. What did we really expect to win? We were trained to believe that the total, absolute elimination of the other tribe and its color was to be the ultimate goal. But after 20-plus years of the war raging back and forth, from the massacre to the we lost count of the wounded and the dead. So who the fuck was winning? Inwardly, we all thought the same thing, but it was illogical and disloyal to the dead homies who had died in combat to even think such a thing. Some members grew petrified and deserted just from the sheer bloody terror of it all. But our ranks, as well as others, continued to swell to full combat readiness to inflict more retaliatory damage on the other side. Just a revolving door of death and self-destruction. All have been trained in counter-revolutionary urban militant tactics, even though we had no idea it was called that. Everyone we knew who survived the deadly ambushes, prison riots, and shootouts at funerals was unable to answer any of these questions of who was winning. One of the first within my hood assigned to the death squad who asked these questions. They took the issue to a couple of the big homies, and they could only answer with, tell that little nigga Taco to stop asking so many smart-ass questions and put in some more work. Of course, once this was ordered of me, I duly followed the order to the fullest. At the young age of 17, I was a seasoned member from the hood who put in enough work to be warned by word of mouth or when I was targeted for execution by seeing my name crossed out on the many walls of the enemy. The walls held the keys to the nature of the conflict, if you could read them and translate the codified meaning. Those who wanted me dead wrote Taco 187, crossed out in big bold letters. Unlike how I feel now, though, back then, I didn't show any remorse, concern, or guilt for all the mothers in the enemy community that lost a son or damaged our daughter to the damage. I was trained to believe that our cause was justified because sometime in the distant past, the enemy crossed over into our hood zone, disrespected us, and intended to violate homie elders. The enemy had to be forced to withdraw. The racist Hollywood industry cashed in and added fuel to the fire when they promoted the senseless killings in a romantic way with Menace to Society, Boys in the Hood, and many, many others. The racist music industry, the same thing with the promote gangster rap and hip hop. Liquor stores popped on almost every corner, and funeral homes moved in to capitalize on the self destruction. Many stores in the hood began to sell gang rags and red and blue clothes. Every capitalistic dog in America wanted a piece of the black blood money. Business was booming. Why else would legendary racist President Ronald Reagan agree to have dinner at the White House with Eazy-E, the best known L.A. gangster rapper in the world? By this, engulfed in a gigantic war between us and at least four large hoods that were bent on our destruction. All of them were hopeless hoods allied together in their hands. We same way as them. All the homies set the stage for battle. Makeshift barricades composed of trash bins and unwalled couches were thrown in the street to stop or at least slow down their drive-by search and destroy mission. Our troops on the front line, hanging on corners fully visible to a lurking enemy, concealed body armor under their shirts and jackets. They were decoys to draw the enemy fire, while the other homies were alerted by to concentrate our forces and attack a given location and an identified target. Some of us took to the high ground and sought an advantage against the enemy's fast-moving attacking car by strategically climbing up in high trees, scattered around the hood while fully armed to the teeth. Other homies were ordered to hide under cars or in the bushes and pop out and smoke anything still moving in the lot when the first wave of the counterattack was completed. The scene was set. These maneuvers were played out over and over again many years with different emphasis and improvisation depending on the nature of the threat. Mainly our defensive tactics to protect the hood. Most of us had come to the conclusion by then, though, that the best defense is a good offense. We followed this principle faithfully to the grave in large numbers. The body count would surely rise in the area. We were soldiers, trained by the hood to maim and destroy. When the call was set out to launch a strike or a preemptive attack against the enemy's hood, very few rejected the mission. If you rejected the call, you were questioned or viciously interrogated to find out if you were going soft or were becoming disloyal. The homies who had already died in battle were held in ultra high esteem, and super respect was conveyed on them by just the sheer mentioning of their beloved heroic name. They were divine saints in our eyes, hood martyrs, almost gods. They were praised, worshipped, revered, and some homies even pray to them in battle. To have an enemy, a stranger, or an unaware black civilian speak ill of them in a disrespectful tone would drive any of the homies to contemplate smoking you, at the least. Imagine in your mind. All of these black youths stuffed in the cars rolling around, prowling and scouring the landscape with automatic weapons, hunting each other down. We've been dying in large packs by the hundreds almost every year since the war has been raging on for almost 40 years. Most people don't even understand the magnitude of the problem. They don't even want to understand the madness that has grown branches in every city and southern town in the country and has infected the faraway motherland of South Africa. Bloods and Crips are sprouting up to destroy the whitewashed fair lie that we were all integrated into a melting pot of freedom, luxury, and peace. Affirmative action and other crumbs that were wrung from the racist government by the movement of civil rights and black power in the 60s are relevant to this mass group of black people who have received nothing but empty talk and false promises. They have begun to feed on themselves in order to attempt to survive. The few black people that have benefited from this neo-colonial setup look upon the majority of oppressed blacks with scorn and ridicule. With a pompous, self-righteous attitude, learn from racist white folks. This fake race of Oreos, chocolate on the outside but white on the inside, only makes meager comments on the gang war, but they don't really care. Why should the Oprahs? Why should the Cosbys? Why should the Obamas care? Most of these bootlicking sellout house niggas know that the only way they can maintain their wealth and middle class status, their positions of privilege, because of the oppressive conditions in the hood is how they got it. Their attitude about the problem is only a behind-the-scenes agreement with the oppressor, saying, it's okay, boss, you just keep us up here near you, and we will help you keep them down there away from you. They may even throw a few pieces of silver to a nonprofit gang intervention program to make it appear that they care, but they know that as long as the masses of people don't struggle for equality and freedom, their meager charitable efforts will amount to nothing. As long as white supremacy and capitalism exist, then their position in society will always be secured. They only acknowledge the problem when one of their close friends or family members accidentally gets caught up in the middle of a tribal gunfight or in the street smoking crack pushed to them by a gang member. Other than that, they act completely oblivious to the horrific gravity of the genocidal issue. I also don't want to give the listeners the false impression that the drive-by was the only mode of combat employed by the gang members. The ways of fighting and killing vary from situation to situation, from battle to battle. Sometimes your weapons change daily, just as much as the rules and the places of engagement against the enemy. The number one medium of exchange, though, gunshots. Today, the conflict and the hand fights died years ago. Bullets were the means of communication on sight of the enemy. Although any weapon was brought to the battle, like knives, machetes, brass knuckles, Molotov cocktails, steel-toed boots, razor blades, 2x4 wood, bumper jacks, zip guns, or homemade guns, crossbows, baseball bats, axes, and etc. Some people even prided themselves on walking on foot to get close to their man or targeted victim to witness for themselves the splattering of the enemy's blood and brain fragments on the concrete sidewalk to satisfy a deadly craving for revenge. Some people have been known for rolling up on enemies on motor scooters, bikes, skateboards, and even roller skates to smoke any person who we consider stupid enough to be standing outside in their hood during wartime. A few homes found pleasure and delight when they decided to masquerade as our allies to our enemy by wearing the wrong colors to create mass confusion and panic as they put in work. Therefore, the white supremacy divide and conquer tactic worked to ultimately make some of our hated enemies and their allies become suspicious of each other or go to war with each other. Then we would pick off each hood, resulting in chaos. Big bomber jackets were worn to cover up bulletproof vests, and stash spots were found to keep guns hidden but easily accessible. High-power infrared beams and scopes were attached to rifles for accuracy. Cell phones were converted to walkie-talkies, and beepers were used like Morse code. Pet bulls were used for intimidation, security, and attack dogs. Booby traps were set up in certain alleys in some people's front yards. Barbed wire was strung along gates and down the street. some hoods were known for even having gotten guns and grenades. As the ghetto arms race kept escalating, rumors flew through South Central Ghetto that one hood had actually acquired a rocket launcher. This is not totally unbelievable, though, because the Black Keystone Gang was set up, framed, and arrested by the pigs for having one in the early 1990s, which was broadcast nationwide on the news. But understand, we considered ourselves to be walking and talking torpedoes, ticking time bombs, missiles. We never considered ourselves to be self-guided missiles, though. I mean, we just didn't kill because we felt like it or just for a color, like blue or red, like most people think. But we thought of ourselves as a fighting family, a military with soldier respect. Disrespect to the hood or any member was spelled instant death to the perpetrator. Simple. Period. Nothing less than this was deserving. Of course, this is exactly what racist white folks want us to believe, because they didn't want us to know of the hideous crimes they had committed against us in the past or present. But if the homies in every hood throughout the country really knew who the real enemy was in full detail, I'm convinced that all black-on-black crime and violent drive-bys against our people would immediately, and we would begin to draft brand new revolutionary battle plans for the whole community. Our guns will be finally turned in the right direction, and we will finally protect our people from the racist, imperialist, and dog that kidnapped us from Africa. In order to do this, though, we got to shake the fear of them. It would take years before I would be aware and enlightened to the truth of revolution and fucking freedom. I'm going to stop right there. Power to the people.
Power to the people. Power to the people. Wow. Don't go anywhere. Go ahead, black man. Let me first give you a strong, strong black hand. General Taco, brothers and sisters, laying it out there for us. And I mean, now you heard Minister Hashim Nzinga kick it, the business and the statistics and the ballistics, and now we're taking it right to the urban warfare on the blocks, talking about what's happening in our community. General Taco, let me ask you a few questions. We got a little time here. I have to ask you now. You've laid out a plethora of information on why communities are the way they are. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
A plethora of information on why our communities are the way that they are, and you have basically talked about the condition where we are today. What is the message? I've got people that's inboxing me right now, people that are saying that this is the kind of message that needs to be heard. This broadcast is the kind of message that needs to be heard in the public school systems, the young black boys and girls. What would you say for the young black boy and girl that's listening right now, who was sitting in the same position that you were in, who was a loyal soldier to the streets, a loyal soldier to the hood, ready to follow instructions, ready to follow orders, but they did not know they were being manipulated? What would you say to that black man or black woman right now?
It's time to recognize your true African identity and recognize that you have an oppressor in order to attack them. That's what
recognize.
Say
the key is to recognize. Say it again. I'm sorry.
I said, did it come through clearly? Because you're breaking up on my end.
Yes, sir. I'm on a landline. Maybe your line, but I heard you clear. I heard you very clear. You said the key is to recognize the enemy, right?
Yes, sir.
Recognize that enemy. Why do you think it is, my brother? Why do you think it is that we're so far into this tribalism? Not just with the blood and crypt thing, or what's happening between particular street tribes. Why do you think that the black community, the conscious community, the revolutionary community, why are we tribal like we are?
One of the key reasons is, like this book I read called Post-Traumatic Slave Disorder. And in that book, it points out how on the plantation during slavery in the 1800s, you'll find that the mother, who was the first teacher of the child, how she treated her daughter in this one story was amazing to me. It was when the slave master rode up on the horse and the little daughter was next to the slave mother, the slave master would approach the mother and ask the mother how the young daughter was doing. Because of these demons and their need to rape black women in order to use that as a rite of passage in their demonic manhood, he began to inquire about the girl's health and her beauty. So the mother, in self-defense of the child, began to degrade and belittle the child right in front of the slave master. He did that in order to protect the daughter from brutal, vicious raping in this war tactic. So when the slave master would hear this belittling and this degraded the little girl, it would cause him and his little penis to curl up and ride away. So because of this mistreatment that she has to constantly put upon her in order to protect her, this has caused a severe self-hatred within our people. This is only one of the stories of the many ways they began to push and indoctrinate us with self-hatred. So as that slave mama began to degrade that little girl, the little daughter, she passed the same traits on to her son, passed these same traits on and characteristics and behaviors to her daughter. Thereby, in the community, now we all hate on each other. Now we all belittle each other. Now we all do each other wrong. If only nothing else but just by the mouth. We have been taught to belittle and neutralize everything that we do to be positive, to be African, to be successful in a revolutionary way. Like Sister Akula had pointed out one day on Facebook, she had a invitation in there inviting black people to actually compliment and tell somebody black that you admire them, that you respect their work. See, this is very important because now what's destroying unity and what's stopping the Black United Front is the same counter-revolutionary self-hatred that we continuously push forth at our people. The whole crabs in the barrel mentality, constantly belittle each other. We refuse to give each other props. We refuse to give each other respect. We refuse to talk highly in a civilized tongue towards each other. All we can do is backbite. All we can do is belittle. And this is one of the key things that's bringing about self-hatred. This is one of the key things that's bringing about black-on-black violence. We need to stop this bullshit and understand that we have a common enemy who is fully organized and united. And for us to defeat this peace, in order to defeat this thing, we have to really understand that black unity is stronger than a nuclear bomb.
And that's black power. What would you say about Chicago, General Taco? The thing on the map right now, Chicago, Illinois, over 500 homicides for the year 2012, and we continue on into 2013, 7, I believe, dead over the weekend, and more to rise. What would you say to the young mothers and the people that are listening in Chicago as it's a gang conflict that's taking the lives of young men and young women? What can we do for Chicago, Illinois, and other areas?
Okay, it's a need to really do grassroots organizing out there and explain to the brothers and show the brothers that the reason why they ain't, the reason why they frustrated, the reason why they so unemployed and broke is because there has been an enemy element, an oppressor who's been conquering and dominating us for far too long. And that their anger and their frustration and pain must be aimed at the right enemy. Because we as a people must understand, as long as we are being oppressed, we're going to be angry, we're going to be frustrated. So in order for us to relieve that properly, we must struggle. We must stand up against these demons in order for us to be properly healed. We need healers and killers in this movement.
Ain't no doubt about it. No doubt about it. What would you say about the international scene, sir, with war on the horizon and the impending predicted internal strife that's taking place in America, the proposed snatching of arms and the Second Amendment right within America? What would you say to the state of the black man and black woman and oppressed people in America and internationally. Are we at that time now to prepare to defend ourselves? Where are we at now in America and throughout the world, especially for black people?
Okay, if you pay close attention to all the news reports, you'll all these demon news reporters going into all gunshots, and you notice that before the ban on that assault weapon could even come out, all the guns. So what that basically tells us and shows us that these laws and these rules and regulations are being put on to keep the powerless against them. Since Bootlick and Obama been in office, there has been a rise in gun sales because really is coming forth. They recognize that the new black liberation movement on the rise, and they see us unifying. So these demons, since the dawn of this country, are starting to pick up their guns and starting to get lost. As long as Bootlick and Obama is in office, push the line that black people is taking over the country. Even though this demon don't represent nothing we represent, the conclusion is that black people are free. Black people have achieved the so-called higher office in this country. Recognize that these clans and all these other white people, they are all getting the rise of black power on the scene. They know what's going down. They had nowhere else to go. Now, if you pay attention to the situation in Mali with the group that's trying to run up in there, it's a continued. It's a continuation of U.S. imperialism going into other people's countries and dominating and trying to take their resources and trying to take their minerals and trying to take everything they got in that country, especially the economic market, so they can push their American commodities, so they can push their fake-ass American democracy. See, that's what we want to really understand. What was over? All this was over. Them saying and lying to the people talking about there was weapons of mass destruction. Yes, 10 or 11 years, these demons still ain't found a weapon of mass destruction. Who got all the goddamn weapons of mass destruction? America got the weapons of a bunch of hypocrites, a bunch of lying thieves and gangsters that we want to deal with by any means necessary.
Beautiful, beautiful. And so, we recognize that the Black Panther Party was a result of the destruction. Pardon me. We recognize that the Blood and Crip epidemic. Pardon me. That the tribalism between the Bloods and the Crips is a result of the destruction of the Black Panther Party. Can the so-called gangs, in your estimation, my brother, be turned back into a revolutionary posture? Can young women and brothers and can the elderly come out of their homes without fearing the so-called gangs or the street tribes? Can that work? Can it happen? Can the gangs be a black united front?
Man, definitely. I stake my life on it because of the fact of the experience out here in L.A. When we got out of TF, which is a gang prison, in 1996, we got out here organizing brothers to stop the gang banging, organizing brothers to recognize their African identity. Them to understand that the whole Blood and Crip phenomena was a setup by the racist U.S. government in order for us to kill and destroy each other. In order for us to prove this, see, we got to prove it to our people and show them, just like Huey P. Newton, just like Bobby Seale, who began to patrol the police and arms with guns to defend the community because it was legal, they need to see the truth. So what we did, we, the brothers and sisters, that began to patrol the police too. We out here pushing a Watch Your Pen program. We out here with video cameras, tasers. We got all kind of legal weaponry, and we patrolling these things with these video cameras. We letting them know that you will not continually destroy the black community. You will not push police terrorism. We will defend us. We will defend the community. So through this actual experience, after doing this for 7 years. We've been out here pushing this line for 17 years, being unifying Boys and Crips and getting them to help their community, get them to save their people, to protect their people. This is where we offer this proof out here in L.A. What we're trying to do is get everybody to recognize and see. Ain't no, can we be conscious? Ain't none of that. Can we be revolutionary? We've been here for 17 years.
think I found out through our president throughout this whole country, and we are organizing against these demons, and we will win. We will not be destroyed like the original Black Panther. We will unite with new Black Panther. Unite with the UNI. We will unite with every revolutionary formation that exists in order to deal with these powers of death, bro.
Beautiful. The number is 646-478-4447, 646-478-4447. General Taco, we have a few minutes left in the show. We're going to the phone lines at area code 718-413. 718-413, you're on live with General Taco from the Black Rider Liberation Party. Your question, your comment, Black Power.
Hello?
Yes, sir. You're on live with us. You're on live with General Taco on Black Power Radio. Give us your question, your comment, sir.
What's up? This is Sean, right? This is Sean, right?
Yes.
Yo, Sean, what's up, man? How you doing? This is Jeffrey Morris. I'm calling you from New York. Black Power and the whole nine yards.
Hey, Black Power. Black Power.
All right, Black Power. Black Supreme Power, yo. You know what I'm saying? I'm straight from Queens, New York. And I just want to make a statement how my penis was electrocuted back in 2004 at a psych ward in Nassau County, East Meadow, New York. That's Nassau County, New York, at a place called Nassau County Medical Center. Now they call themselves Nassau University Medical Center. I just want to get that on record with the new Black Panther Party of Self-Defense. All right? I just want to get that on record. You know what I'm saying? Because I was there for like 2 weeks. The whole time that I was there, they didn't give me no medication. How they did it, I don't know. They had me in the observation room. Nothing was hooked up. But I'm just warning everybody, there's something out there. The thing about it is, one would automatically think if a person was like, you know, in a psych ward, they automatically got to be crazy. Anything come out their mouth. I know a lot of people who supposedly have like mental problems. They always say the CIA, the FBI, so people automatically say, well, that's a part of their symptoms. But this is something that I'm the first brother that experienced this. All right, shredding down. So I just want to get it on record with the new Black Panther Party of Self-Defense.
Let me slow you down, Black Man. I want to open up Brother Minister Hashim and Zinga's mic, too. We got Brother Minister Hashim and Zinga, General Taco from the Black Rider Liberation Party on with you and us. And we're trying to understand your question. You're saying that somebody electrocuted you and mistreated you. What happened to you, brother?
I was put into a fight with my father, who was the detective for the NYPD. We had an argument. So my older brother also a police officer. We all African American. I love my family, you know what I'm saying? But it was a misunderstanding. So I went to the hospital voluntarily to speak to, so a psychiatrist can check me out. I guess out of safety reason they was like, yeah, we're gonna keep you here. All right, so the second night that I was there, they had me in the observation room. That's the room where the doctors, like, they observe you for 24 hours. Except they had, like, brown paper covering the whole observation window with a little section cut out. But not on June 17, 2004, at 9 o'clock sharp that night, my penis was being electrocuted by, it was, nothing was hooked up, no wires. How it was done, I don't know. I do have my medical records and everything. That shows somehow my penis was swollen, and you know what I'm saying. So that's
how it was done.
I don't know, but I just want to stress one last thing.
Okay.
The reason why I have the opportunity for years, I've been trying to find somebody to touch base with, whether Bobby Seals or somebody like that. But like I said, it's like a woman being raped or something, to where, you know, it was a time when a woman get raped, you know, people wouldn't believe it. They'd be like, are you sure? Are you making this up? You sure you didn't? So it's the same thing. When a black man's put into a psych ward, and any and everything that comes out of our mouths, the police can beat the hell out of us, which happened to me also, is supposed to be part of our symptom. So therefore, if they give us medication, here it is, we're dealing with the government. You give a person medication, you're supposed to forget about it. You know what I'm saying? So anything you say during that period of time, it come out your mouth, they're going to automatically say, oh, he's a magic, he's delusional.
Right, right. Yes, sir. Because I want to get some more questions in it. But what I'd like you to do, my brother, is to give an email. Email.
I'm your friend on Facebook. I'm Jeffrey M. Mars. I wrote you earlier. I was going to tell you that I was going to call the show.
I remember you. I certainly remember you. What I'm going to give you is some advice. Email our national chairman of his organization called Black Lawyers for Justice. It's Black Lawyers for Justice, and you can get invite via email at ShabazzLawOffice@yahoo.com. ShabazzLawOffice@yahoo.com or www.blfjustice.org.
Okay.
And get that. The only thing
is statute of limitations is up.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Let them work that out. You know,
okay,
he's an attorney. He has qualified people with him at Black Lawyers for Justice. And you can also get him at attorney.shabazz@yahoo.com. But email me on Facebook because I want to get some more callers in here. And I will get you that information right away, brother.
All right, one love, man.
One love to you, brother. Stay strong, black man.
No doubt. Always, baby. Always. Black power.
Yes, sir. All right. Let me bring another call in, brother. Minister Hashim, you still on with us, sir?
Yes, sir. It's been an awesome show. Oh. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. We can hear you. You're on with General Taco as well. And we're rolling
How
through the
doing,
calls.
How you doing, General? How you doing, black man? Power to the people. Black power. Yes, sir. It's always good hearing you out there with that West Coast energy.
For sure, man. I'm definitely glad you're loose.
Yes, sir.
All right, let me bring another call in here. We're in the after show now. We want to get through these calls and hear you brothers' final comments. Let me bring in area code 347-664. 347-664. You're on live with Minister Hashim and Zinga and General Taco from the Black Riders Liberation Party. Black power.
What happened to Dr.
Eric, call 347-664. Your mic is open. You have a question or comment? Let's keep it moving. It may just be listening. We'll move to Eric code 562-239. 562-239. You're on live with Black Power Radio with our National Chief of Staff, Minister Hashim and Zinga, and General Taco, Black Riders Liberation Party. Black Power.
Black Power, Brother Sean. Brother National Spokesman, I'm sorry. This
yes,
is your West Coast minister. Of course, your brother Vernon X out here on
Black
the West
power.
Coast. How
Black
you doing,
power.
Brother?
Fine, my brother. How are you, brother Vernon?
Brother, enjoying the show, brother. Chief of Staff and Zinga, brother. Brother, so good to hear your voice, brother. You sound strong and you're a mighty warrior, of course. And General Taco, I met you when the chairman was here, and it was a pleasure to meet you, brother. You're a born leader. I'm sorry, but I just got off work. I'm outside. But, brother, I just want to comment, brother, National Spokesman. Thank you for the show, brother. It's just,
oh, yes, sir.
General Taco,
yes, sir.
And they both are bringing so much information and so much, so much energy, brother, and just information all day. But, brother, I always say this, brother. We are black people in a white supremacist system. You know, I have told brother that many days, brother, don't expect too much. We are going to have to do for self. We are black people in a white supremacist system, and solutions are the only way that we have to have solutions. We know what the problem is, you know, but Brother Sean, I just want to say this. The greatest weapon we have against this enemy, brother, is the love we have for each other. And General Taco said this earlier. He said, as the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad says in Message to the Black Man, he said that our unity is stronger than an atomic bomb. So, brother, our unity and the love for each other, brother, that's all we need, good brother. And that's all I wanted to say. And thank you for the show. General Taco, love you, brother. Hope to see you again out here on the West
Black
Coast.
Power. Black power.
Black power, Brother Vernon. Thank you so much for your comments. Any of you brothers want to comment on Brother Vernon's, Brother Vernon's comment?
I just want to thank him for the words. And you know, I used to really get excited. I'm 50 years old. I used to really, really get excited when people tell me I was a born leader. But boy, that Bible is so true, Brother Sean. They say that word lead means you come a servant and a slave for the people.
That's
yes,
right.
Sir, yes, sir.
And when you create that condition for yourself, the possibilities are great, and we accept the challenge. but we are in such a spiritual warfare in this world that our people are so self-destructive. Our people are so miseducated, misled. We are a group of people that are so hard to lead that it is really, really a burden on God, not us anymore, because the dysfunctional part of us that we want embraced, we're scared to use the word psychologist, which Amos Wilson used to tell us about. We got to stop, Brother Taco, as you know, acting like you can be stolen from your land and enslaved for 500 and some years and maimed and lynched and burned at stake and your wife taken from you and sold, your baby killed in front of you. You whipped every day. You build and can't get paid for building. You pick crop and can't get paid for crop. And then all of a sudden, some man who never had the right to enslave you and can't free you because you're free from birth and you're free from your soul. And all of a sudden he used the word that you are free and put you through sharecropping, put you through Jim Crow, put you through civil rights. And then you come up all the way to 2013, and you still can't go a block from your house without the same motorcycle in the 60s pulling up behind you. You can't go a block from your house, and you can't go anywhere without seeing the same signs of white supremacy. And then you flip it and have to deal with black folk that's acting like white folk. We got a lot of leading to do, and brother, I'm going to keep doing the best I can do, but we got to get this unity thing together, and we got to understand clearly that this problem is an easy one to handle. This journey has been too long for us not to be much farther along. Harriet Tubman had dogs chasing her in rivers and creeks. You know, Frederick Douglass was a slave saying, "Who am I to speak on your 4th of July," knowing he could be lynched at the speech. And we got people afraid and would tell us tonight that Brother Taco is talking too hard, talking too loud, when Frederick Douglass was talking like that in 1840, before Abraham Lincoln even thought about signing a piece of paper to free people who are already free. So we are chosen, and we are brave, and we're not going to turn back. But the word us means a lot more to me now. You can go ahead, Brother Sean.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you so much. See if we have another caller here for you, brothers, at area code 562-607, 562-607. You're on live, Black Power Radio, Minister Hashim Nzinga, National Chief of Staff, and General Taco, Black Riders Liberation Party, Black Power. Your question, your comment, talk to us. I recall 562-607.
Yes.
Your mic is on. Hey.
Yes,
Power.
Talk to the people.
Talk to the people.
Sean, I had, my phone was breaking up a little bit there. I apologize. I want to give a big props to our General Taco. This is Mahogany
Sir.
X.
Talk to
Power.
Talk to the people. You did a great job, and you're always breaking down as always. And Black Power to you, Brother Sean, and Black Power to you, Brother Nzinga. What I wanted to bring up was, like, what I was envisioning was, like, having small organizations, hopefully that are organizations somewhere in L.A. or somewhere in the country, would open up or start a grassroots organization for kids from the ages of maybe 14 up until 21, since the white educational system will not teach them this in school, to open up organizations, black organizations, to open these kids' minds, to start getting their minds focused and to open up their own businesses. Because, as always, we've always been trained to go to school for 12 years, go to college, and then we go out, and then we get paid by the slave master. We get signed by the slave master. Why can't we teach these kids to, once they get out of college, to start being more business-minded and open up businesses for themselves? They're black businesses. Get into black capitalism and start hiring nobody but black people. Black people, nobody white, because this is what we are talking about. And what made me think of that was when Brother Hanzina was talking about how only blacks spend only $130 billion, you were saying, Brother? You said $130 billion that we spend, but the white people spend like over $1 trillion? Well, we need to get up to that trillion. And the only way we can do that is to start training our youth to get the get their mindset into opening up their own business, even at a young age. Get them, get organizations to take them to successful black businesses. Have black businesses owners to come and speak to them on how they started out and how they can get the young minds focused into and, you know, to look up to them. I'm nervous right now. I'm not even thinking straight, but because I'm not used to talking on the radio like this. But I'm just saying that, you know what I'm saying, like getting the young kids starting out at young ages from 14 all the way to 21 to start getting their minds focused into getting their business. Start taking up courses in colleges about starting business, taking up business courses in college and getting things that they're interested in, because all we know is rap, all we know is basketball, football, and stuff like that. Why can't we get more businesses like black corporations that hire black people, that do for black people, that can get corporations to go all the way out to Africa and give more back to our black people? Black corporations that give to Africa, that give to our own black, and put those black dollars right back into our black communities and get more black people to get more into more business. I'm probably not sounding like I'm making any sense, but I'm just nervous right now. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's like don't wait until they're like 25, 26 and then have them think on their own and say, okay, well, I think I wanted to start a business of my own. Start them at a young age. You know what I'm saying? Take them on field trips. Have them watch certain Black Enterprise magazines or watch Black Enterprise TV shows and train their minds into doing for self, doing self-sufficient for their own minds. So that's all I wanted to say.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Go right ahead, sir.
Yeah, definitely, though, sister, we definitely support that. Our main thing is to try to develop right now what we've been working on for the last couple months, which we had before, which is the George Jackson Freedom School, which is an after-school program that's going to be bringing brothers and sisters into African Rites of Passage program. But also there's a need to develop businesses to support those type of programs. Each business must have a program in the community. See, one of the problems in the community right now with the few black businesses that do exist, one of their problems is they end up either practicing white supremacy or following the paths of these other people who come over here, like the Koreans and the Jews, and they get barrels of buku money, and they take that money out of the community, and they go to the valley, they go to these middle-class suburbs and keep all the money still within the white society. Our problem is we need to realize that black capitalism, as we know it, is a foolish option. There have been many leaders who have pushed this and have failed miserably. The businesses we set up must be based on black communalism. They must be based on the majority of our people being economically empowered instead of a bunch of few individuals that's basically some Oreos and some sellouts who take all the money out of community, no different than the white folks in the Queens and all that. So our businesses must be based on communalism. It cannot be based on European capitalism, because we're going to end up exploiting our own people and becoming neo-colonial puppets. Also, the issue is, too, there's a lot of people pushing Buy Black campaign, and we support that. But we must also realize that these businesses must have conscious raising programs attached to them, because one of the things with the Buy Black campaign is the fact that we don't know we're black. You feel me? So it's like, how you going to buy black? They don't know they black. One of the issues is, like Marcus Garvey taught us, that the brainwashing and the self-hatred makes us go in another place other than where black businesses are. And one of the problems with the black business people today, they get frustrated, they get more capitalist-minded when they don't see black people supporting them, is because they don't have a goddamn conscience-raising program in the community that the people can see to make them want to come in and support that business. So in order for us to buy black, we got to become black, you know, or else we're going to fall victim to the self-hatred, which makes us believe that the white man, ICE, is coated in our ice, that the white man's sugar is sweeter than our sugar. And that mentality basically makes us think that we should go into these white society stores and get the products that they got because they're cheaper or they're better. And this foolishness has caused us to keep continuously supporting these white business people who are racist dog capitalists who won't hire nobody. But the black ones begin to practice the same economic model. And we must reject that black capitalist economic model. We must support the community and raise consciousness. That way the people become black and support the Buy Black campaign. Power to the people.
Oh, yes, proud to the people. I'm down for that, so we can add that into our program.
Yes, sir. Brothers and sisters, we're going to have to bring this thing to a close. Me and Minister Hashim is going to have to get on a conference call to get over to Africa. But I would say, Minister Hashim, if you have any last thing to say, we can get in right now, sir.
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, we got to conduct an organization assessment. The black organizations in our community, and those organizations, after we assess what all we're doing, come together on our strengths. Then we have to map out the available resources in our community and establish a mechanism of community institutions, black community institutions, that can go out and challenge our people on this global economic transformation that we're going to have to make to survive. Because it's not going to all come from America. America's only going to give these slaves, us, so much. But we got a globe to work with. And as long as they cripple us to thinking it's got to happen down on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard or it can't happen, it's not going to happen. We got to reeducate ourselves, redevelop our culture. Number one thing we got to remember is the reason some of these crackers or white people are so successful because the fathers teach the sons the business when the Italians come here, when the Jews come here, when the brothers and sisters from India come here, they and the Chinese and the Japanese, you see their babies working in their places. They pass this information to their babies. Their babies are used to doing commerce, used to doing trade, used to working in industries from babies. We don't have any job to pass on our children, and sometimes we think too big. We got to start off with just the lemonade stand, the fruit stand, the basic things that Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the black message to the black man used to teach us, and then developing our own resources. And we got to always remember we got too much farmland that's available, and blacks own tons of farmland, but all of us have ran to the cities and left the farms. And when you go to that basketball game, they eat popcorn, it comes from corn. When you go and see those people buying all that beer, it comes from wheat. Everything is developed from the land, and they parlay it in the millions of dollars. So we have to just do an assessment of what we need to do and what we can do and do what we can do and build what we need to do. Thank you, Brother Sean.
Yes,
sir.
I definitely appreciate y'all letting me be on the show. I definitely appreciate being on here with Chief of Staff and the National Spokesman, Black Power All Day, to all the new Black Panther Party and all the revolutionary groups. Man, we got to pull this thing together. In 2013, we got to smash on these enemies. Power to the people.
That's power to the people and black power for black people. Thank you so much. That's General Taco taking all capitalists out, and we definitely taking all crackers out as well. Tune in to another edition of Black Power Radio every Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. Join on to this movement, this Black Power movement, in the spirit of the Honorable Dr. Khaled Abdul Muhammad. Join on nbpphq@yahoo.com. Black Power.
Once you change your philosophy, you change your thought pattern. Once you change your thought pattern, you change your attitude. Once you change your attitude, it changes your behavior pattern. And then you go on into some action. As long as you got a sit-down philosophy, you'll have a sit-down thought pattern. And as long as you think that old sit-down thought, you'll be in some kind of sit-down action. They'll have you sitting in everywhere.
it's not so good to refer to what you're going to do as a sit-in. Then right there, it castrates you. Right there, it brings you down. What goes with it? What think of the image of someone sitting? An old woman can sit. An old man can sit. A chump can sit. A coward can sit. Anything can sit. Well, you and I have been sitting long enough, and it's time today for us to start doing some standing and some fighting to back that up.